Introduction to Exegesis and Narrative Genre by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract of this talk. A brief sketch of the competencies we need to develop in preparing to do responsible exegesis of the Bible. A list of the genres we cover in our Synoptic Gospels course, and an introduction to the narrative genre. Well, in a brief introduction to exegesis, what I want to deal primarily with here is building our exegetical competence. When we first start out seeking to interpret the Bible, we're probably not going to be very good. Hopefully, as we continue to work with the Bible more and more, as we study more and more, outside materials that help us with background and such, we will get more and more competent. So a seminary course is designed to give you the basic tools and give you some initial practice, but you should get better and better over your career. One feature that's very important for building exegetical competence is Bible knowledge in your own native language. My practice for probably 40, 45 years, maybe 50 years by now, has been to try to read through the Bible once a year. Of course, I read it in English, that's my native language, but your native language might be Korean or Russian or Chinese or French or German or Spanish. If you read through the Bible again and again, year after year, you will eventually get fairly familiar with the contents of the Bible, and you will certainly have a good idea of what is and what is not in the Bible. And that is very, very important in order to be able to respond to really crackpot ideas, such as the claim by some that the Bible teaches reincarnation because it says you must be born again. Once you've read the Bible through a few times, you begin to realize that nothing about reincarnation, in favor of it anyway, is in there. Hmm? You know, Bible knowledge in your own language is quite important. We at Seminary suggest that competency in biblical languages can help your exegetical abilities as well. It is not necessary to know Greek and Hebrew in order to be have a good understanding of Scripture, but helps, and it helps you to see what the actual ambiguities and such in the biblical passage are, whereas when you're reading it in a language that it was not originally written in, you're going to be dealing with the ambiguities in that translation, which are not going to be the same ambiguities as those in the original language. So having a competency in Greek and Hebrew, Aramaic, can be very worthwhile. Aramaic, of course, is the smallest amount of the text, just part of the Old Testament text, and certainly many, many people get by without that, and many people get by without a Hebrew competency as well, a feeling that the most central things of the Bible are found in the New Testament. Well, that's true, but it is good to have a good handle on what the Old Testament is about as well. So competency in biblical languages is good. And that means not only studying them on your own if you have to, with a good teacher if you can, and then trying to keep them up to some extent as well. A third area of exegetical competence is what I call Bible background knowledge. And we have a little bit of stuff on our IBRI website that seeks to deal with these particular matters as well. Have a feel for what the historical background was in the periods and locations where the Bible is written or that the Bible is referring to. I would suggest trying to read a fair amount of the primary sources, if one can, things like Josephus, things like the Old Testament Apocrypha, Pseudepigrapha, materials that deal with the background, the rabbinic literature, and that sort of thing. I suppose, again, it would be ideal to read those in the original language, but that's probably too much to expect. Trying to read those in good translations can be very, very helpful. I tried over most of my career to read at least 50 books a year in material, some of which is Bible background, and that does help you get a feel for what's going on there. You will begin to notice things in the Bible that stick out having read the background that you would not have noticed if you had not read the background. fourth point to build exegetical competence, and probably the major one in many ways, is spiritual insight. Even if you know the Bible in your own language, even if you're competent in the biblical language, even if you have Bible background, if you really have no spiritual insight, if you don't love the Lord with as much of your heart as you've gotten to at that point, and a desire to serve Him, and want to know Him, and care about what He cares about, etc., then the rest of your material will probably only add to your judgment rather than helping you to be the kind of person you want to be. And so as we seek to live the Christian life, as we struggle with the different things, as we learn from one another, we will build a spiritual insight that will help us to be able to apply our Bible knowledge and our biblical languages and our Bible background in order to be able to better grapple with what the Bible is actually saying, in order to better understand it and better communicate it to other people. So that's really all I'm going to say about building a exegetical competence, if you like. That's something that's a lifetime job, and yet it's something that will begin to produce benefits for us right away as we begin to work on that. In our Synoptic Gospels course, we deal with various genres, that is, various types of literature that appear in the New Testament and in the Gospels. In our classroom discussion, the passages we look at and such, we cover the genre of narrative, which is what we want to look at here in our talk today as well. We cover the miracle account, a report of a miracle done by Jesus in the Synoptic Gospels and in the book of Acts by apostles and such as well. We discuss the genre we call parable, illustrative story, told by Jesus in this particular case in the Synoptic Gospels, that is designed to illustrate the kingdom of heaven. It'll illustrate some spiritual lesson which he is giving us, but does so in the form of an earthly story. We'll discuss the controversy account. Jesus' ministry was filled with controversy, and so we need to understand how to grapple with a controversy account and find out what the controversy Jesus was really in before we begin charging off and applying it to controversies we are in. We have PowerPoint talks that will be up on our IBRI website on all of these narratives, this one we're actually looking at here, miracle account, parable, and controversy account. There are a number of other genres that occur in the Synoptic Gospels that we don't cover in our class. Discourse, where you have a report of one person speaking, and with the exception of a brief discourse by John the Baptist early in the Gospels, the discourses are typically Jesus speaking in the Synoptics. Obviously, you get discourses in the Acts and Pauline epistles as well, and they could be discourses by other people. A symbolic action or acted parable, I say a word or two about that in our discussion of the genre parable, but that's a pretty important thing as well. And then, just in rare cases in the Synoptics, we have a genealogy. And what do we need to look for when we are looking at a genealogy? We have dialogue, where we have two persons conversing back and forth. In the Synoptic Gospels, you generally have some brief statements by someone that is questioning Jesus or arguing with Jesus or something, and then his responses in more detail, so they're not an even-up dialogue where both persons are saying the same amount of things. But still, we do see this genre in the Synoptics. Well, we want to talk here about the narrative genre, and our first question is, what is a narrative? Well, a narrative is a story or account or tale of events. That is, it's about some sequence of events, and it's organized to present this so that it's understandable and interesting and all of that sort of thing. A narrative may be either factual or fictional. Those of us who read novels and such are thoroughly familiar with fictional narrative, and fictional narrative is usually designed to look like it's factual, though not always. Fairy tales don't necessarily look that way. Narrative is a story, account, or tale of events that may be either factual or fictional. The narrative genre is a very broad class. genre is not itself a statement about what level a particular type of literature occupies. So your highest level in literature we might think of as prose or poetry, and then under prose we might have the various genres we mentioned a few minutes ago, such as narrative and discourse and dialogue and that sort of thing. And under poetry, we might have particular things like limericks and epics and that sort of thing as well. Well, narrative is a broad class, and narratives are usually in prose, but not always. Certainly the Iliad and the Odyssey from ancient Greek literature are narratives, but they're in poetry. And we find that in a number of cultures that sometimes there have been substantial narratives written in poetry. Milton's Paradise Lost is a narrative that's written in poetry, huh? The narrative genre may include or be included in other genres. The Gospels are narrative, and yet they include dialogue and discourse and parable and genealogy and that sort of thing. And a letter, which we might think of as a genre, epistle or letter, might include a narrative of some sort. It might include a little piece of poetry and such. So the narrative genre may include other genres in it, or it may be included in another genre of some sort. What are the components of narrative? Well, the actors or characters are the people who show up in the narrative, particularly the people who are named or described and who figure prominently in the action. Then the second component, in fact, of narrative is the events or the action. A narrative is characterized by, typically, actors or characters doing things, okay? Actors acting, characters doing something, and then not necessarily just the actors and the characters doing things, but things happening to them, events of one sort or another. They're involved in a war or a very fierce winter or something of that sort. Those would be events or action. Typically, we can divide up a narrative into scenes. A scene takes place in one particular location over typically a limited period of time. And you can see some of these terms are terms that come out of drama, because drama is often thought of in terms of this sort of thing. Well, you can say in some sense that a narrative is a written drama of some sort. And then fourthly, I list this component of narrative, the plot. And this describes how the events or actions, the scenes, the characters fit together, and what is going on. And there might be more than one plot in a particular narrative. There may be one plot might be the development of a particular character as that character grows up. Another part of the plot may be the war that this person is involved in off and on in the course of this particular story that's being told and such. So you can often have several plots, perhaps following various characters who interact with one another, so that the plots intertwine. What kinds of narratives occur in the Gospel? Leland Ryken, in his book Words of Life, A Literary Introduction to the New Testament, has listed and gives us a nice list of the different kinds of narrative that occur in the Gospels, and particularly the Synoptic Gospels as well. He mentions, first of all, annunciation or nativity stories. That is, accounts about the birth of someone or accounts about the announcement that this birth is going to take place. Now, an annunciation story or a nativity story need not be the particular stories that we see in the Gospels, the annunciation of the coming of John the Baptist, and then his birth, and then the annunciation to Mary of the coming of Jesus and his birth. In some other kind of literature, it might be an announcement or a birth of the prime character, and now, particularly if it's a biography of some sort. But So we can define a genre that includes more than just the Gospels, and that's typically done. And then you can see how the Gospel writers handle this particular genre in their own distinctive way because of who Jesus is, or perhaps because of their own cultural background. This is the way a Jewish writer, this is the way a Gentile, a Greek writer might handle something or another. So Leland Wright can list, first of all, Annunciation or Nativity stories, then what he calls calling or vocation stories, in which someone is called to a particular occupation or activity. The ones that strike us most in the Gospels are those in which Jesus calls various of his disciples. He calls the disciples by the seashore as he's walking along, and Peter and James and John, and Peter and Andrew, James and John, leave their boats and their nets and follow Jesus, etc. Or Matthew is sitting at his money collection table, leaves that and becomes a disciple of Jesus. So those would be calling or vocation stories, but those aren't, again, just limited to the Gospels. So we can find works which fall into this genre in historical narrations of a particular person, Oliver Cromwell or Napoleon or someone like that, or in a fairy tale. They're features of narrative, and they can be in narratives which are factual, like the Gospels are, or fictional, like various novels and fairy tales are. A third type of narrative found in the Gospels are recognition stories. These are stories in which someone comes to realize who someone is. One of the striking recognition stories in the tales of Robin Hood is when this mysterious knight near the end of this cycle of stories is recognized to be Richard the Lionhearted, the King of England, who has returned from the Crusades, etc. So, in the Gospels, the particular kind of recognition stories we see are when people realize that Jesus is indeed the Messiah. Think of the woman at the well in John chapter 4 who comes to realize that Jesus is the Messiah. Or Nathanael in the first chapter of John who comes to realize who Jesus is. Maybe a fourth type of narrative in the Gospels that Wright in notes are what we call witness stories. These are stories in which someone bears testimony of something that has happened to them. A blind man who has been healed and the Pharisees are trying to get him to repudiate Jesus, but give the glory to God, if you like. And blind man has no objection to giving glory to God, but he's not about to repudiate Jesus, since Jesus is the one who has made him well. So he's testifying who Jesus is. I think early in the Gospel of John to Philip, who has had an encounter with Jesus and is now trying to get Nathanael to go meet him, and what he has to say is an example of a witness story as well, where the woman at the well going into the town there, Sychar, and telling the fellows there whom she has met. Encounter stories are stories about someone's encounter with someone else. And obviously in biographies of famous persons, someone's encounter with Alexander the Great or Napoleon or something like that. In the Gospels, someone's encounter with Jesus, and think of the blind man at Jericho who calls out to Jesus and Jesus heals him, or the encounter again that the woman at the well has with Jesus. Widow of Nain's encounter with Jesus, etc., when her son is raised. Encounter stories. Conflict or controversy stories are accounts in which, in a narrative form, a controversy between two different sides of something, some dispute, are sketched for us in the Synoptic Gospels. These are particularly common disputes over the Sabbath, disputes over paying taxes to Caesar, disputes over the resurrection, etc. Very common type of story there. And yet, again, those are something that are not just restricted to the Gospels. In rabbinic literature, you have stories of rabbis disputing with opponents of various sorts. Pronouncement stories are stories in which the chief figure makes some kind of a statement that is very weighty in form criticism. These are sometimes called apothem stories or saying stories. But think of the pronouncement story in Matthew 16 where Jesus says to in some sense, you've got a recognition by Peter. You are the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One, if you like. And then Jesus' pronouncement, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but I say to you, you're Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church." That's a pronouncement story, if you like. It frames that account of Jesus' remarks about what's going to happen to Peter and what's going to happen with this church that's going to be built, and the confession of Jesus as Messiah on which the church is going to be built. Well, that would be an example of a pronouncement story. Or the one in the end of John, where Peter wants to know what's going to happen to John, and Jesus says, "If I wish to have him remain until I return, what is that to you? You follow me," etc. Pronouncement stories. Miracle stories, they're very, very common in the Gospels, Synoptic Gospels, and in the Gospel of John as well. An account that basically centers on a miracle of some sort, and again, in the Gospels, these can be miracles Jesus does, but you have accounts in Josephus of Jewish exorcists pulling a demon out of someone, and perhaps more rarely, some remarks in the rabbinic literature of Hani, the circle drawer, who would ask God to bring rain or something and would draw a circle in the ground around him and says to God, "I won't leave the circle to send rain," etc. Miracle stories of one sort or another. And those in the Gospels are true. Those outside may or may not. The Bible certainly doesn't deny that other people have worked miracles in history. Miracle stories center around miracle, and we will discuss those in one of our other PowerPoint talks here, so I won't do more about it here. Passion stories, stories about the death or suffering of someone, and obviously this would be a characteristic of accounts that are biographical accounts of people who are martyred, perhaps, or who went through some very great struggles. And for Jesus, his death, in fact, is kind of the centerpiece of the whole gospel. Some people have even suggested that the gospels are passion narratives with an extended introduction. So the various accounts relating to Jesus' death fall under the category of passion stories. And we could put resurrection account under there, or that could go under miracle stories as well. Reichen lastly has kind of a catch-all, which he calls hybrid stories, which reminds us that these various types of narrative that we've listed above don't always come just a pure version of one of these things, but sometimes they are mixed together. A miracle account might have a pronouncement connected with it, or a conflict account might have a pronouncement connected with it, something of that particular sort. Well, that gives you a feeling for the types of narratives there are in the Gospels, and we end our discussion here of interpreting narratives basically with this. Go to it. Think about these different kinds of narratives there are in the Gospels, and ask yourself on a particular narrative, what kind is it? And what would the characteristics of this kind of narrative be? Getting a copy of Reichen's Words of Life might be helpful there. That's been replaced recently by his bigger volume that's a literary introduction to the whole Bible. You might want to get that instead. And then when you do that, it begins to help you to ask questions about what's going on in this particular incident, and then be able to unpack what the writer has to tell you about this as well. Well, that's it for today.